This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Emma.
I'm Lily.
And I'm Riley.
This season, we are exploring the story of Ordained Women, a feminist group working for women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Ordained Women gained national notoriety for their direct action events in October of 2013 and April of 2014, and then again when their spokesperson, Kate Kelly, was excommunicated by the LDS Church in June of 2014. A decade after all of this, we talk with some of the women who helped organize Ordained Women in its direct action events and learn about the impact of this group on their lives and on the LDS Church, an organization that still does not ordain women.
Each of our series investigates a different topic. Last episode, we talked about opposition to the movement, and today we're going to look at the lasting impacts of ordained women today and the future of Mormon feminism. More specifically, we are examining the movement after Kate Kelly's excommunication and the current involvement of the board in activism today. We're going to investigate how are these women participating in Mormon feminism today? What do they think Mormon feminism will look like in the future? And what has been the lasting impact of ordained women on their lives?
We first asked Joanna Smith, Lori Stromberg, and Nancy Ross about how they are still participating in Mormon feminism, if at all. Here is Joanna Smith, a former LDS who has since joined the Community of Christ and been ordained.
I'm very involved in Mormon feminism. I run the Ordained Women Instagram page, and I'm currently putting a series up of women historically who were ordained and the date that they were ordained. So that's what I'm doing there. Constantly reading and attending retreats. And I'm involved. I see all these people all the time. I texted Kate this week about going to see Suffs in New York City with her about the suffragettes. I'm working on a podcast about Mormon murderers and about how the patriarchy hurts everybody. So, yep, very, very involved.
And now we'll hear from Lori Stromberg, an executive from Ordained Women who once served on the board of Exponent 2, a Mormon feminist blog named for the Women's Exponent, a Mormon women's publication dating back to 1872.
I'm still involved with Ordained Women. We still have a bit of an organization and that sort of thing. We maintain the website, and we're not averse to doing actions. It's hard. It's hard to do activism. It's hard to do religious activism. But I'm getting old, so I keep my toe in.
Next, here's Nancy Ross. Ross is a professor at Utah Tech University who, like Joanna Smith, has left the LDS Church to join the Community of Christ.
So I still blog for the Exponent blog. I help run a family camp called Feminist Mormon Girls Camp every year. Yeah, no, my Mormon feminism is really important, is like really important to me. It's also something that I feel like I can solidly take with me. I still work in the area of Mormon studies, and that's kind of my area of research. I still identify as a Mormon feminist, even if I don't identify as like LDS.
We also asked each of the interviewees to speak on the lasting impact of their past and ongoing participation in Ordained Women and Mormon feminism as a whole. Joanna Smith describes some of the formal discipline she received within the church and how her relationship to Mormonism has changed.
So I was in the Relief Society presidency, which is a leadership position within the ward. So I was removed from that calling, and I was never given another calling again after that. And then I didn't get formally disfellowshipped or anything, but I did stop going. I kept going until they did the November policy change, which made it so that if you had a gay parent, you weren't allowed to be baptized or go on a mission. So they call that the November exclusion policy. And I stopped going at that point. My aunt that had, again, previously been involved in Mormon feminism and friends with the September 6th, she called me up and said, you know, you don't have to fight this for everybody else. You don't have to have more and more generations of this. And I will forever be thankful for her to give me permission to let go. Spiritually, it's who I am. I give my kids blessings. I claim the priesthood for myself here in my own home, and I still do that. I have stepped away from mainstream Brighamite Mormonism because I can no longer and will no longer support the patriarchy and its toxicity and the cost it is to all of the women and queer people in the church and the minorities. but I'm still Mormon girl. And I will always be. I've stayed connected to the amazing, strong people in my life that I got to meet through Ordained Women. And I claim my own power. And I celebrate it in everybody else.
Nancy Ross also experienced blowback from the church and from people in her life. When we asked about her fear of or experiences with formal discipline from the church, Professor Ross also told us about how her work affected her family and her marriage.
It was definitely a fear. And it was a fear for my husband as well, because he thought that his family wouldn't speak to me anymore if I was excommunicated. I was called in to speak with my bishop a couple of different times. And so basically, I told him how I came to believe in the ordination of women. And I told him my story about praying. And I was like, look, my belief in this thing comes from my faith. And I also made it clear at that time, it's like that I didn't need my bishop to believe in the ordination of women. I just needed him to accept that this was important to me. And that this was a result of like my prayer and my faith. He's like, I don't know what to do with that. And so then he was a decent guy. And so he was like, okay, well, I guess we're leaving it there then. And I was like, but also there were several other times where I think higher up leaders asked him to call me in. I went in and we had a conversation and I said things that he didn't expect me to say. And I think that really disarmed him. But also that we kept having to have that conversation was really upsetting to me. I felt like at some point the goal was for me to trip up so that they could take action. And that would have been really hard on me and hard on my family and hard on my husband and hard on my husband's family.
She also told us about how she felt her advocacy had impacted her professional life.
It's very tense. It's very tense in just about all areas of my life. So to say that it didn't just impact one or two relationships, it kind of impacted a whole bunch of relationships. I was also aware that people at the university were aware of what I was doing, where even though my university is a state university and a secular university, we've never had a president who wasn't a white Mormon man. And to this day. And like so many of the administrators above me were white Mormon men. And right, like, and it was at a time before we had lots of women faculty at the university that was still, we were still kind of in a process of growing up as an institution. And so it impacted a lot of relationships and it's not comfortable. And everybody, it feels a little bit like everybody hates me. I'm like, it's like people either hate me or I'm like a small hero for them. And like, that's a weird place to be.
Hannah, too, said that ordained women and Mormon feminism have had immense lasting impacts on her life, many of them negative. She credits the movement, though, with helping her learn how to deal with it all.
It had a huge impact on my life. I was co-president of the BYU Democrats Club and I remember just feeling watched. Like, people recognized me on the street in Provo, found experience. And honestly, like, when Trump was elected, I have since then felt like I was better prepared for handling the daily drudgery of like, this is miserable, because I already knew what it was like to exist in an environment where, yeah, everything sucks. And like every day the people around me find new ways to hurt me or be disrespectful or make me think that progress isn't possible. And yet I'm going to keep fighting for it. And I would not have had that kind of a mindset if I had not been organizing with Ordained Women.
Lori Stromberg, though, says she didn't experience a huge change in her relationships. She married her husband while involved with the movement and seems to have had fairly accommodating, if not supportive, area leaders.
Did it affect my relationships? Not much. I mean, my husband is, you and I are on the same page on many issues, not everything, but, you know, on a lot of issues. And, you know, he married me knowing I was a feminist. I married at 30, and by that time I was already pro-ordination. And I don't want to say there weren't some things, because my in-laws are not happy with my behavior and my activism. My state president received a stack of stuff from Salt Lake. And there was a letter signed by the area authority. It said, we'd like to draw your attention to this material. We think it speaks for itself. It was all highlighted. All these things were highlighted on various publications that I was involved with. And I said, I heard through the grapevine that he'd received this. And I called him and I said, Howard, do you think that I heard through the grapevine that you were going to excommunicate me? Do I need to worry about that? And he said, no. I said, do we need to talk? And he said, well, you can come and talk to me if you'd like. And when I did, he showed me all this material that came. He said, I just think it's a, no, I'm not going to do anything about this.
Ordained women might not have the momentum it once did, but Mormon feminism is clearly still front and center in the lives of many of the group's founding and prominent members. After asking about Mormon feminism in the present, we wanted to ask about its future and what Mormon feminists think that future will look like. We'll hear now from Hannah Wheelwright, a political strategy advisor who was the youngest person on Ordained Women's board.
In some ways, I would like to believe that the future of Mormon feminism will be that there will be increasing like changes in a good direction, and that there will be more and more people talking about it, and that hopefully less and less people would be disciplined. But it kind of seems like the church is doubling down. And I feel like Mormon feminism is going to have to grapple with what it means to continue to be part of a faith that is emboldening those like aspects, as opposed to embracing like dissent and community and like other values that Mormonism has had throughout its history. Like, a lot of Mormon feminism is going to depend on the everyday people across the world, because Mormonism is a global religion, who choose to use their power in ways that help the church to grow and you know, whatever, in whatever direction that folks believe in who are participating.
Joanna Smith is also cautiously optimistic, though worried about how the church might weaponize women's ordination.
I think it will become more common, as it has. It's no longer a swear word. I think we're going to have a lot more moments. I really worry they're going to give women, I think they're going to give women a priesthood in my lifetime. And then I think they're going to give it to the women that are like the Sherry Dews of the church that punish other women. And so I'm very worried about what that looks like, because they'll celebrate it while also punishing women. I hope we do better at picking up the people that have been cast or unnecessary. It's needless suffering. So I hope progress can just happen because we're rising together instead of separating and triangulating our community. Because for every Mormon woman feminist in the pews that you see, she's a legion of thousands behind her that you don't see.
Like Joanna, Lori Stromberg expressed how actions from the church are serving to inhibit growth of the movement.
Because there have been these excommunications, and a lot of people, there are people who are afraid of church discipline and being cut off from families, and because it some people have really suffered a lot because of it. The activism, I would say it's not the majority at all, but some have. And not to dismiss it. It's significant and painful. But I think in our survey, it was like 15% of our had some kind of blowback.
Nancy Ross is a little more confident about it all.
I think Mormon feminists are born every day. Like, every time the church does something stupid, people run to Mormon feminist spaces because they want to find safe places hidden from the eyes of their family members to be able to talk about what's bothering them. And every time this is, and there's like this, like every 2 weeks, the church does something stupid in the news cycle, and more people try to like make their way into spaces where they can discuss things. And so there will always be a steady stream of new baby Mormon feminists. We all suffer from the same like cishet patriarchal system. I don't know, but I am really interested and curious about and invested in finding answers to that question.
All of the women we interviewed seem to be holding out hope for a new wave of Mormon feminism, even if they still carry with them some of the frustrations and challenges that accompanied their own advocacy experiences. We loved learning about these amazing women and getting to hear firsthand about all of the ways they are still participating in Mormon feminism and what they think the movement will look like in the years to come.
We are immensely grateful to them for sharing their stories and hope that you find their stories to be as inspiring as we did. They have all faced, to varying degrees, scrutiny and pushback from families, employers, and friends, but have managed to keep standing tall. These women and their testimonies serve as powerful, poignant examples of the movement's struggles and the resilience of those who support it.
Thank you for joining us for the final episode of this season of Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks again to Joanna Smith, Lori Stromberg, Nancy Ross, and Hannah Wheelwright for taking the time to speak with us. We would also like to extend our gratitude to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team for helping us to put this all together. Finally, we thank the Religion Department at Smith College for supporting public-facing student works. We hope to see you again next season.